This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at It's Will Time and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Will and Jake preview WWE Backlash. Hey, speaking of WWE Backlash, that show's on Sunday. If you want live coverage of that show, go to ProWrestling.net. If you want an audio review of that show from Jason Powell, sign up for ProWrestling.net membership. You get all of the benefits of .net membership, including ad-free access to the site, audio reviews of every major show, and so much more. Check it out, ProWrestling.net, for as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. Or, if you just want to try it out for a month, see if it's for you, $7.50 a month. You should get your ProWrestling.net membership on. Now, enjoy the show, folks. So, Jake, we are getting ready on Sunday to step into a world that we have not had to go to in, what, 5-6 years? When was the last brand-exclusive WWE pay-per-view? I want to say 2007, 2008?
Yeah, I think that's about right. It's been a long-ass time.
Yeah. We've gone a long time without a half-roster show.
And it doesn't really feel so much like a half roster show. I'm surprised by how much they've managed to fill this out in a short period of time.
Same here. I, especially looking at the SmackDown roster right after the draft and commenting on how shallow it looked, I'm pretty excited for this card. I think they've done a pretty good job building up SmackDown and building up a lot of these matches. Now, I will say they do have to now build another one after this. Like, every show probably has one or two good pay-per-views in it. What determines if the show has the depth that it needs and if the show is going to be good enough is what they do after. But Backlash itself, I'm actually kind of excited for. I think it's going to be a fun night, and I kind of think it could have a really remarkable moment to close the night.
I guess I remain unconvinced. Like, I don't know if this is when they pulled the trigger on an AJ Styles championship win or not. I mean, they seem to have more confidence in Dean Ambrose than I would have expected. You know, he's been put in a position to, you know, at least on the microphone, carry the show on numerous occasions now. And so, I mean, is it possible, you know, that we see some kind of, you know, AJ Styles screw up that leads to a loss, and, you know, he has a rematch at the next one down the road? I don't know. But, I mean, for me at least, I would prefer to see, you know, AJ leading the show as a heel, because I think it would open up a lot more possibilities for them, for challengers and whatnot.
And to me, it seemed more like SmackDown has been centered around AJ Styles in the last few weeks, especially coming out of SummerSlam. And I know part of that is him being the challenger for the world title. So he's in the biggest program on the show and the most important thing on the show. But it's just felt more like the AJ Styles show to me than the Dean Ambrose show. And we can get into it now since we're previewing the card. Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles. It's the main event of this show. If there's one thing that we know about AJ Styles, that dude delivers in main events. I think Dean Ambrose could have a career best match come Sunday, and these two guys could put together something really remarkable. And as I said, I think this is the time to pull the trigger on Styles. I think they put him on such a great role. They've been doing basically having him steamroll people in good matches, but still, AJ comes out the victor. AJ comes out the decisive winner. He beat John Cena last month. He's been beating guys on SmackDown. Hey, let's put the title on AJ and let's not have him lose for a good long while at this point, because, hey, that's a great way to push a dude.
So I guess there's another match on this card that I think is hard to ignore in the context of the title match, and that's Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt. And I think beyond, you know, Dean Ambrose getting his rematch if he were to lose the championship, which I think is a strong possibility. I mean, those two seem like they would be, you know, in position to, you know, slide into the number one contendership. And I guess, you know, the reason that I'm not 100% committed to the idea of AJ Styles getting his win right now is that I, you know, Bray Wyatt seems like he's in a position where he needs a win. And like, it would make a lot more sense for him to face Dean Ambrose than it would for him to face AJ Styles. And I think you could, you know, you could protect Styles enough in a finish if you, you know, had him, you know, and set him up for a feud with Orton if they wanted to go that direction and postpone what I think is the inevitable, which is him carrying that championship into WrestleMania for the SmackDown brand. So that's where my thought process was on that.
I get that. And I totally get kind of postponing it, not wanting to round into that WrestleMania story too soon, because that would be dangerous. That is hard. And WWE has done that in previous years where they've got the table set and everything is ready for WrestleMania the first week of January. And now we wait and wait and wait, and everything happens very predictably and annoyingly. The thing for me with that Orton and Wyatt match, I think Wyatt eventually does feud with Ambrose, and I think Orton eventually does feud with AJ. I think we're going to get 2 or 3 months of Orton and Wyatt feuding, though. So I'd see it as them having more time. And we would also, of course, you mentioned this, get an Ambrose and Styles rematch. I think you could even move Dolph Ziggler, depending on what they're doing, into a big match with Styles, in the same way that Ziggler just had a big match with what's-his-face? Dean Ambrose, that's the one. In the same way that Ziggler just had this match with Dean Ambrose, I think they could do the same thing with Ziggler and Styles. There are a few other possibilities on this roster that are babyface possibilities, and I think that opens up to some time before you do get to AJ Styles and Randy Orton, which I would agree is probably the biggest non-John Cena match that they have on SmackDown right now. That is kind of the next big one, and I think a really, really important one once they get around to it, because that's going to be fun. That is a feud that people, much like Styles and Cena, people have wanted to see Styles versus Orton for years and years. But I see it more as them having a lot of time to get to it, so they're not going to rush through Orton and Wyatt.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. I mean, I guess I'm not utterly convinced, but I think if I was going to pick, if you made me flip a coin, I would say Styles probably comes out of the show with the championship, because he's just far and away the biggest star on this show. I know they had high hopes for Ambrose bringing the championship to SmackDown, but I just don't think his current character makes a ton of sense as the leader of a brand. You know, he doesn't care. No, he's apathetic. He's too cute. Everything's a joke. I just don't think that's, I mean, at least for me, and I know there's a lot of people out there that dig it, and I totally respect that, but it's just not the kind of character that I would want to invest in long-term as a champion. And so I understand why, you know, they would move it at this point. I just think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of storyline considerations for the long-term, you know, if they wanted to pace things out a little differently where you could justify keeping it on Ambrose for another month. And on to the, I guess, another point on the Orton and Wyatt match. I think we're getting pretty close to Luke Harper's return. Do you think this could be the moment where he might get involved here and reunite the Wyatt family?
I think that would be fantastic to see, especially with them having a tag division as well on the SmackDown brand. I liked Harper and Rowan as tag team champions. I thought they were, or as a tag team in the tag division back in the day, they were never tag team champions on Raw or SmackDown, but they were in NXT. I think that'd be a great place to put Harper and Rowan eventually. Once you kind of settle down the first, you know, once the Alpha and Usos feud dies down, Alpha stands victorious, they're the biggest deal. Well, now you have Harper and Rowan, the big monsters coming to get him, and wouldn't you know it, Luke Harper can work, y'all. Like, work like crazy. Luke Harper's amazing. So you'd have great matches in that, because Eric Rowan, I think, would look fine. He'd be dynamic, he'd be exciting, he'd be fine in that role. So I do think we could see Luke Harper come in, help Bray Wyatt beat Randy Orton, and maybe that is how they end that one. How have you felt about the hype for Wyatt versus Orton? I'm just kind of over the Bray Wyatt hype package in general, so it's hard for me to say, like, oh, cool, that he talks about snakes a lot. Randy Orton thinks he's a snake. Take me away to Viperville again.
It's difficult for me to get into because I've kind of learned to tune out the gibberish promos that Bray Wyatt cuts on a lot of occasions. In my reports, I just try to get like a synopsis of it the best I can because, you know, trying to get it word for word is extremely difficult. And from a, you know, just, I'm still a fan of Bray Wyatt. I think there's a lot of promise to that character and the Wyatt family and that mystique that they, you know, they really squandered when they had a great opportunity to, you know, to put a championship on him or to have him be, you know, a world champion. And that's kind of why, you know, this move to SmackDown was kind of interesting for me because it's like, well, you have two champions now and you can experiment a little bit as we're seeing them do with Kevin Owens. With the Universal Championship on Raw, you know, Bray Wyatt could be a world champion on SmackDown at some point. And having, you know, the Wyatt family together as a force on this show is kind of an interesting prospect because I think Luke Harper is somebody who could easily be credible carrying the Intercontinental Championship. And of course, you know, Harper and Rowan would make excellent tag champions, as you've already pointed out. And so, you know, it seems like there's a lot of pieces clicking into place there for the Wyatt family. But as far as what they've been doing with Orton and Wyatt, I thought it felt kind of forced. I mean, their performances weren't terrible. And I think they, you know, they had that kind of strange, like, you know, I have some begrudging respect for you, but I'm still going to kill you kind of vibe going on. And I just, for the first match in a feud, it just kind of felt out of place.
Yeah, it's to me the characters. To me the characters are almost too familiar with each other at this point, and that makes it feel written. It makes it feel inorganic, which I know it's wrestling and it is inorganic in a lot of ways and it's strange. But I do wonder if it could be more organic, if it could be a little better. I don't know. I'm picking Bray Wyatt to win this one. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think Wyatt gets a win here, but it's probably not the last we've seen of this feud. I expect it to carry on for, you know, at least another
year,
SmackDown only pay-per-view.
Three.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, with the limited roster they have, you know, you can't just flush feuds down the toilet after the first match. Otherwise, you know, you're constantly doing musical chairs with these feuds between different guys, and you'll burn them all out in a very short period of time. So I expect this one to continue, and I think for that to make any sense, you got to have the heel steal a win in the first match.
So speaking of heel stealing wins, let's move to The Miz defending the Intercontinental Championship against Dolph Ziggler. I'm pretty okay with this as far as Miz and Dolph Ziggler matches go, and that is mostly because I really have enjoyed The Miz lately. So I'm okay with, it's Ziggler. I know they think Ziggler's a thing still, so let's let him do it. But in general, I don't approve of many high-profile Dolph Ziggler matches, but I'm kind of interested to see what this match ends up being.
You know, it's interesting that you just kind of walked right past the "they still think Dolph Ziggler's a thing" line, and I think, you know,
that's like the core of WWE's push of Ziggler right now.
Yeah, it really is. You know, they attempted to do something interesting with him and Ambrose, and they got the first night of it right, like that first intense promo between the two of them where, you know, it was Dolph bragging himself up and Ambrose saying, you know, you do this all the time and it never amounts to anything and you're going to lose. And then he lost and then they kind of just dropped the feud. You know, it was just over. And so I don't know how you do anything interesting with Ziggler without turning him heel here. I think he has to lose somehow, you know.
Whether this has to be part of his frustration, right? Like,
Yeah. I mean, and he has to snap. Like, he just has to flip out. And
like Ken Shamrock?
Not well. If he wants to break somebody's ankle, be my guest. But I think the whole idea that he's been talking himself up as this show off and the guy who steals the show, and he has nothing to show for it. You know, that should be a lot more aggravating to him than it is. You know, he just sort of plays it off like nothing gets to him as a character. And I think that's really boring as a babyface. I mean, if you're going to lose all the time, you should at least be upset about it and show some vulnerability and frustration and set yourself up as an underdog. That's a tried and true wrestling format and it works. But they don't really seem to do that with him. He just shakes off these losses like it's nothing and like, oh, I had a great match, so who cares if I got beat for the 500th time in a row? You know, I just don't think that's very compelling as a babyface. And I mean, maybe The Miz isn't the perfect character to go out there and have him turn heel on, but I don't know. You know, I think it's going to get to the point where it's either now or never. I think they have to do something with Ziggler if they want him to stay interesting. So I'm going to pick The Miz to win, and I hope it involves Dolph Ziggler finally snapping and beating the crap out of him after the bell.
So do you think they pull the trigger on this show? Because to me, I would almost wait till maybe SmackDown the week after, you know, have Ziggler get another shot or get another opportunity for something and have him lose after that. Maybe even have a babyface, like, beat him in a number one contenders match, and then Ziggler beats up that babyface or something. I would almost rather see that than have Ziggler turn right after this and beat up The Miz extra, which people are going to be super into anyways.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to happen on this show, but I think you have to plant the seed that he's starting to lose the grip a little bit on, you know, his his friendly side. You know, yes. I think he has to start to, the cracks have to show in his character, you know, like, because at least in my opinion, and you know, you might not agree, but it feels like he's been putting on a mask, like when he goes out there, like he's just the most insincere babyface, that I can recall in some time. Like when he's on commentary, especially, it's just, it comes across as totally phony. And so, you know, if that becomes like, you know, when he finally snaps, if it's like, yeah, I've been pretending to be a different guy, hoping it would get me somewhere, but now, you know, this is me. I think that, you know, that's okay. That could work. They could get some mileage out of that.
Yeah, I think they could. Do you think Dolph Ziggler's heel turn will be as good as Carmella's heel turn has been?
I hope so. Like, has Carmella's heel turn been that good?
I've enjoyed her.
I think it's okay as long as she doesn't have to talk very much. I think she, you know, she has that issue on the microphone where it just sounds very rehearsed, and so maybe she can shake that in the coming months, because she doesn't have, you know, a ton of experience with it at this point. And so it's something that will improve over time. But I think from a physicality standpoint, she's done a great job as a heel. I think she's got the body language down. She's got the, she does the facial expressions properly. That part of it's working for her. And I think some of her moveset, you know, lends itself to being a heel. So that part of it, it works. It's just, I fear whenever she holds onto a microphone.
I think she's done a really nice job transitioning into a heel role. To me, she seems like a much more compelling act as a heel. There's the annual or show. There's the traditional appearance of my dogs. To me, she has done a much better job actually transitioning into being a heel and transitioning into that character than I thought, because she was so one-dimensional. She was a less compelling Lady Enzo in NXT, and even on even in that first appearance on SmackDown. And the turn on Nikki Bella, I think, revitalized both characters in a way that needed to be done, especially given the reactions Nikki was clearly going to get. I'm interested to see who wins this six-pack challenge. It has all of the women in the division in it. They've done a really nice job getting all of the women involved. And more than anything, more than a particular person winning and losing coming out of it, what I hope to see is all six women still somehow involved in TV stories. I want to see Alexa, Becky, Carmella, Naomi, Natalya, Nikki all still presented on TV on a regular basis, as opposed to what we get so often, what we've gotten for years from WWE's standard women's division and what we get on Raw, which is, here's Charlotte, here's her challenger, and maybe if you're lucky, a Nia Jax squash.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that they've done exceptionally well, is that they tried to get the division established before they just, you know, threw a championship out there. And I understand they're crowning the champion on the first SmackDown only pay-per-view, but I think we're 7 or 8 episodes in now. And,
yeah.
And it seems to, you know, they seem to at least have a semblance of who these women are established. And, you know, it'll be difficult to keep all of them in active feuds on every show, but I think, you know, they could at least, you know, do some storyline maintenance with a backstage vignette or something for everybody, you know, just to let you know that they're still there and
yeah,
they have a purpose. But you know, one thing that kind of weirded me out about the whole Carmella situation is, like, I thought they missed an opportunity. Like, they had her attack Nikki Bella, and that was the catalyst for her turn. But I always thought it would have been more interesting if she would have, like, become Nikki's understudy in a way, and they could have been heels together. Like, I think that's more interesting to me than Nikki as a babyface, where I think she struggles mightily. I just don't think it comes across as you know, as well as WWE thinks it does. She's always been sort of phony as a babyface, much in the same way that Ziggler comes across at times.
I think one of the interesting things with Nikki is just how crowds react to her and react to the Bellas in general. We see a lot of crowds cheer for her. I've seen, you know, we've both seen at house shows, we've seen various things where it's like, oh wow, the Bellas are actually really popular. How did that happen? And I'll tell you how it happened, because they're great. But I think people do want to cheer for Nikki. I think she needs to settle into the role a little bit better. I think she needs to, there is still something personality wise about her that comes off as false, that comes off as inauthentic on WWE TV. And she would be wise, honestly, just to sit down and go, how can I connect better? To sit down with her brother-in-law, Daniel Bryan, who's, you know, in the building and everything, and go, how'd you do it? Like, how do I take that next step in connecting with people, because I want to have that connection? But I think it's interesting to have her as a babyface. I don't hate it, and I think it makes it slightly more compelling when at some point she ends up against Becky Lynch. It is a way to put off the Becky Lynch against Nikki Bella match that, to me, is the top two, like, the best match that this women's division can present. It's a way to put that match off until, say, WrestleMania or sometime then, and not have to do it immediately. Who do you think leaves with the SmackDown Women's title?
I'm going to pick a wild card and say Carmella. I don't think it goes to Becky Lynch.
Wow.
I know she's the favorite, but I just don't see it happening. I think that moment, her title win, you know, it has to be a major moment on a big event. Like, I understand that, you know, the first SmackDown pay-per-view is a big, you know, event for that brand, but I mean, that should be at a Royal Rumble or a WrestleMania or something along those lines. Because I think once she holds the belt, it almost feels like, well, what now? You know, like the story doesn't seem to write itself. I think she plays a very good underdog, much in the way that Bayley does. And I think for now, you know, put it on one of the young heels and see what they can do. Like, just give them a shot. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, a couple months down the road, you know, move it on over to somebody else. Or even if it, you know, after a few weeks, it doesn't really matter. I think the, you know, it's going to be a chance for them to sort of put their best foot forward in terms of establishing the division as maybe a little bit unpredictable. Because I think that's the one thing that Raw has going, you know, against it right now, is that the women's division just feels completely out of sorts. And And Charlotte, despite the fact that, you know, she gets decent heat, but, you know, I think it's just, it feels like it's been going on way too long and the Revolution is petered out and they only have one or two interesting things that, you know, they can do with her. And so, you know, I think you put it on somebody young, you give them a chance to have decent matches and see where it goes. Because the worst thing they could do is, you know, put it on Becky and then, you know, have her struggle to find meaning as a character once she's a champion and have it be, you know, that be the high point of her career on the main roster.
I agree with that. I'm kind of inclined to say Becky wins here for the same reason that Sasha Banks won the WWE Raw Women's Championship on the first major episode of Raw. And to me, that would be that they want to have the big moment, the big celebration on this first SmackDown brand pay-per-view, the same way they wanted Sasha to have that on the first Raw. I don't exactly say, oh, okay, that's what they're going to do, but I lean towards that. I also think it could be a gold watch type of title for Natalya. As far as baby faces go on this roster, you have Nikki Bella and Becky Lynch who can both challenge for the title convincingly. Cool. Put it on Natalya and let Nikki challenge her, then let Becky challenge her and beat her or something. You can do something like that and maybe distract Becky with Alexa Bliss for the, you know, first part of it. I could see something like that as well. I think they definitely have a lot to play with in this division. It's six women. They're all in one match. This division seems infinitely more interesting than what Raw does with the women, which is, I guess, just saying, hey, nice work, WWE. You got it half right. Now let's go to the tag title situation. Do the Usos or the Hype Bros advance to the tournament finals?
I'm assuming it has to be the Usos. I mean, I don't know why you'd do anything else. I mean, it seems like they added this match to the card, you know, just because they needed to fill time, like this whole injury angle and everything. Like, it's like, ooh, this might be running a little short. Let's do something interesting with the tag division because we need more matches, and they can fill time with tag matches.
I think it's filling time, but more interestingly, filling time until we can get to a American Alpha title win. I think it's just a way to put off that title win for American Alpha that they know will be a big deal, that they know fans will celebrate, that they know people will get excited about. That's more, it's filling time on the SmackDown brand in general and filling time on the pay-per-view. Even though if this pay-per-view went off the air after 2 hours, I would not complain. I would not feel ripped off. I would not be upset. I would probably feel strangely refreshed. Do you think Heath Slater and Rhino leave this baby with the tag titles? Are they bringing him home to Mrs. Slater?
I think they have to. Yeah. As weird as it sounds, I think you have to have the Usos advance and you have to have Alpha cost the Usos the tag championships. And that'll be, you know, the way Heath Slater slides himself into a job, because I think that's the story that they've been telling here. I mean, it seemed obvious that, oh, well, Alpha's going to waltz to the finals and win. But, you know, the same reason I think that, you know, they're probably not going to go with Becky Lynch is the same reason they're probably not going to go with Alpha, is because I think they want to preserve that moment for a time when they feel like they've earned it from a storyline perspective. And I don't know that they've earned it in either case here.
I don't know that they will hold off on both. And I also, that's my main thing. What do you think of what they've done with Heath Slater, though? I have been, like, I've always kind of been a Heath Slater apologist and a lover of what he does, because I think he's one of the best at the style of character he plays in wrestling. But I've really, really enjoyed the Heath Slater stuff for silly camp comedy. I don't know that I really love the kind of hillbillies sense of humor of Vince McMahon, but I've enjoyed what Heath Slater as a performer has brought to those sketches, and I think he's done his job exceptionally well.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has benefited quite as much from this brand split as he has. he's definitely carved out a niche for himself. I mean, crowds dig it. I mean, they really have reacted to him strongly, you know, whenever he's appeared on camera. So I think he's done a great job sort of reinventing himself again. You know, he said a few different periods in his career where you were like, you know, he works pretty hard, even if he's not really getting anywhere from a push standpoint. And I think people recognize that backstage and are, you know, sort of rewarding that now. And you know, I think he'll have, I don't know if it'll be, you know, a notch above what he was doing previously, but he'll have a spot on SmackDown where he'll get a chance to perform, you know, and it, you just give him a microphone and a chance to make an ass out of himself. And he seems to do a great job of it. You know, he's just give him the opportunity and he's entertaining win or lose. You know, I think that's the most important thing about his character is that it's not really about victories. You know, it's just, it's like Santino when he was at his best, you know, it's just, he goes out there and he has a great time and he entertains people, and that's necessary on some of these shows.
Yeah, I have found it to be a welcome addition to SmackDown recently, and I think it's fun, and I think he'll continue to be fun. I think he has a long time ahead of him to be fun, and I like the new wrinkles they've added to this. How are you feeling about this show in general? Do you think it's going to be a good show? Or are you disappointed by the lack of Baron Corbin?
No, not really. I mean, I think he could be a, you know, a meaningful part of that Intercontinental Championship division down the road, but I think there's some character work that they need to iron out with him, you know, just to figure out who he wants to be. You know, he did the bully character well, you know, when Kalisto was healthy and he was able to, you know, to throw him around. But I just don't know that the lone wolf character and the, you know, I only care about myself. I mean, I think they have to flesh that out more before they toss him in there with, you know, somebody who can actually have a decent back and forth promo.
Yeah, they have a lot to do with Baron Corbin. I'm excited about this show, though. Like, I think this is going to be a fun night of wrestling. It'll be a small night of wrestling as my actual television will be watching football like most normal humans. But the iPad will be fired up and watching the pay-per-view at the same time, unless I find something better to do.
Yeah, I think there's reason to be optimistic. There's quite a few matches on this show that I think, you know, if given enough time and, you know, the performances click, you know, we could see some, you know, some good action at least. And I mean, I can't imagine they're going to go the full 3 hours here. I mean, there's not that many matches on this show. I hope it's a, you know, a 2 hour show or the main event is starting right at 2 hours. I don't think they need to push it as far, especially with an hour pre-show. Like they're going to be running out of content. You know, it's not like a, you know, they don't have the roster that Raw has. So I don't think they can fill out 3 hours on a pay-per-view, unless they're going to have, you know, AJ and Dean Ambrose wrestle for 45 minutes or something.
Yeah, and who knows, that could end up being really good. But even with that, I don't know that you need three or a 3.5 hour show or anything. But yeah, everyone, you can find coverage of that show of WWE Backlash from Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net. And yeah, you should check it out. And Jake, are you getting together with Jason to do audio that night, or is Jason not going solo because he wants it to be short so we can get to football?
That is for Jason to tell me. I have not heard from him yet, but I'm assuming we'll have a conversation, but it may be abbreviated because he wants to watch some football.
Yeah, he could try watching football while he records audio.
Well,
he'd be so distracted.
Oh, man, yeah. He watches football unlike anybody else I've ever met. So, he's a very big football fan, especially when around, you know, fantasy leagues. So, I'm assuming that would be a near impossible task for him.
So, you just have to carry the show. I believe in you.
I can ramble.
Yeah. So yeah, everyone, check out the coverage of WWE Backlash on the site, and Jake and I will be back next week. Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!